Welcome back, everyone, to the OIS Retina Podcast. This is Firas Rahal, the host. I'm a partner here in Los Angeles at Retina Vitreous Associates and also a general partner of Excite Ventures, which is centered in New York City. I'm delighted today to have as my guest Dr. Matthias Steger, who is currently the CEO, co-founder, and board member for Endogena Therapeutics. Thank you, Matthias, for joining us today. I'm looking forward to our discussion.
Well, thank you, Firas. It's very nice to do this podcast today with you. I'm very much looking forward to it. And thanks for inviting me.
Save the date as OIS returns to San Diego on December 1st and 2nd. Our 13th flagship summit unites corporate, clinical, and capital leaders driving novel therapies for both the front and back of the eye and focuses on addressing unmet needs across all of ophthalmology and optometry. Registration and applications to present are now open. Head over to OIS.net and click on events for more information. Your path to innovation begins here.
I usually start a little bit, as I mentioned to you, with some background on you personally. I like to hear about the audience likes to hear about what people have done, how they came to the point they are in their career. And I noted that in your background and education, you obtained degrees in organic chemistry and biochemistry at the University of Zurich, and then a PhD in medicinal chemistry at the University of Sussex, and ultimately also, probably while you were working, I don't know, an MBA at University of St. Gallen. And then you went on to, it looks like, start work at Hoffman La Roche in early part of your career. Why don't you tell us a little bit about this background in your education and then early professional life?
No, yes, I'm very happy to do so. And I know, I mean, my CV looks like a red thread and very nicely laid out, but I didn't plan any of it really. So I approached this. My CV is a bit like my life as a scientist, which is very much driven by serendipitous discoveries. But obviously, serendipitous discoveries only happens to those who actually see the serendipity appearing, you know. So I always try to make sure that I'm a little bit ahead of the game. So I studied indeed organic chemistry synthesis in Zurich with biochemistry, because very early on the organic synthesis itself was interesting to me, but only in an applied science such as, you know, like pharmaceutical discoveries. So for me, very, very early, this became very interesting and I wanted to go in this direction. And that's also why I did my PhD then at the University of Sussex, because at that time, mind you, that's more than 25 years ago, there was no such thing in Switzerland. But in the UK, they already had medicinal chemistry as a PhD subject. And I synthesized novel antibiotics in that group. And that was very interesting for me, apart from the fact, of course, living abroad and doing this abroad. Upon returning, then I got offered positions returning to Switzerland, right? And because I wanted to go into pharmaceutical industry, it's not the worst place to start. Yeah. So I got offers from both large pharma companies there. I decided for Roche because it was a new group, a new endeavor, how to improve actually the lead identification molecules in the screening assays. You know, Roche has a historical library that is rich, you know, of many different kind of molecules, but some of the molecules were not appropriate anymore for the new diseases that we were targeting. So there was a component involved of chemoinformatics. Today, you would call it AI or machine learning, but at that time it was called chemoinformatics, that very much interested me. So, and I will come back to that also, because we use that at Endogena as well. So that was interesting to me, but basically I was a lab head, you know, working in the lab, synthesizing molecules. And that was a lot of fun because I was finally able to apply what I have learned and practiced at university also in industry. And a few years after that, friends of mine from Roche, they started a company that was after the deciphering of the human genome, where many more receptors, particularly G-protein coupled receptors, for short GPCRs, were discovered, but neither their ligand nor their function was known. So they were named or coined orphan GPCRs, orphan GPCR receptors. And we started a company based on the concept of deorphanizing these receptors. And whilst deorphanizing these receptors, we figure out, you know, the function. And should the function be associated with a disease that has an unmet medical need, then we would already have a molecule that could become a drug candidate. So that was the idea. And again, here we used chemo and bioinformatics. I was very fortunate I could build up the whole drug discovery team there and lead it.
Was this the Axovan company?
Exactly. That's Axovan that later then got acquired by Actelio. So that was kind of the first success, if you like, even though at that time I was sad because I was building up something. But nevertheless, of course, that's why I mentioned before my CV was from one to the other, you know, because the first time I got in contact at Axovan was with the money world, right? So far, I was a scientist in the lab. And so I suddenly had to explain, you know, to investors, what am I doing? Why am I doing that? And what it's going to be worth, you know? And I at the beginning, I found this a bit strange, you know, because obviously I tried to find novel drugs that per se had a value. But the more I thought about it, I got a hang of it. And I thought, after we got acquired, I entered into a full-time international MBA. And that's where I learned a lot. And particularly, I built a great network there. It was a one-year full-time international MBA where you have a lot of bonding, obviously, during night shifts of doing these group works. Once I have completed the MBA, I intentionally didn't go back directly into biotech or pharma because I wanted to have the opportunity to look from the outside onto the industry. And that's why I went to investment banking. And it was fantastic.
So that wasn't serendipitous in the sense that you sort of to formulate sure. the plan. And this answers a question I had, which is you were fully planning to return to pharma and biotechnology Correct. After this stint in business. Please describe. That's cool.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That was indeed the plan. But before doing that, I wanted to learn more how on a higher level the whole industry is working. And honestly, it was for me, this time at the investment bank was really very high and steep learning and very valuable for several reasons. Firstly, this was the first time where I got in touch really with products on the market, with payers, reimbursement approaches, with the whole pipeline concept, with clinical projects, how to value them, etc. So the whole technology, how to value these operations and also to see trends, where are trends going and what is worth pursuing very strategically. And secondly, it gave me access to the highest level of people. You know, I had access to CEOs, CFOs, CSOs of all of the large pharma companies. Sanofi, Bayer, you know, all the European company, GSK, etc. And during that time, there was a big wave of mergers. So Bayer acquired Schering, UCB acquired Schwarz Pharma, and Merck, the German Merck, acquired Serono. And I had all of these on the coverage. So a lot of work, but the learning was immense, you know. And actually, I really appreciate and I like doing that. The learning, and at the same time, it was nice because the know-how that I brought into it was really appreciated. because I was kind of unique at the investment bank, right?
Yeah, I would think so.
And so that was also appreciated, and it was nice. However, somehow, obviously, my work at the bank, obviously, where you then publish these reports, etc., about the stocks and shares of these pharma biotech companies, was not unseen, you know. So it was there was an attention to that, and I got recruited back to Roche. And I basically, that was a dream job that was offered to me. It was head of research and technology partnering. And at Roche, it's very exciting to work in partnering because it's not embedded in a research or disease area. It's really directly reporting to the executive committee. So my boss at that time, Dan Zabrowski here, was in the executive committee. And so everything that was not a clinical candidate was partnered in my team. And it was all kind of deal structures, you know. It was M&A, partnering, collaborations, etc. So, but the most interesting thing that happened during that time was that Shinya Yamanaka made his breakthrough discovery of reprogramming adult to pluripotent stem cells, which really was the start of an explosion of stem cell biology know-how that emerged. And I was very fortunate at Roche that I could build up the whole stem cell research group there through external collaborations and technology transfers, but also then doing the work actually internally at Roche. And again, learned a lot. And that actually led then to endogenous therapeutics, because when I could kind of see how we, you know, how we screened like neuronal progenitor cells, hepatocytes, cardiomyocytes, etc., on the Roche compound library, I could, as a medicinal chemist, I could see a structure activity relationship according to the different developmental pathways, but also according to the function they exhibited, such as proliferation, differentiation, survival. And because we have gotten better at treating a lot of diseases, but I think ahead of us is a huge problem, which are all the degenerative diseases, as with the demographic change, as we're getting very much older. And I saw this as a huge potential to tackle not just one disease, but many diseases through that novel concept of, with small molecules, endogenously regulate our own stem and progenitor cells to repair organs and tissues.
Hence the ideas behind endogenous. So I'm glad you took us there, because I want to move to that now. And I see how it stemmed directly from your career at Roche and the developing technologies of the time. So the timing was just right. Tell us a little bit about the scientific protocol with your stem cell approach that you learned and you're applying now, and also how that might compare and differentiate from other stem cell programs where the cells themselves are being implanted and so on and so forth.
Yeah, exactly. As you just rightly said, I think that's the most important differentiation. We do not transplant cells or stem cells. We literally work with our own, hence endogenous stem cells. That's where the name comes from, endogenous therapeutics. The mission is embedded in the name. It's regulating our own stem and progenitor cells with small molecules according to the different developmental pathways for different organs and tissues. And if you like, we can move on now to describe how we exactly do this in the eye, or do you have a different plan in between?
No, I would like that. I think that's a perfect timing to hear about how you're doing it in the eye. And if there's other organs you're interested in, feel free.
Excellent. Yeah, good. So in our lead project in the eye, and endogenous was started pretty much exactly 7 years ago in August 2016 on a pure hypothesis. And that was very fascinating, because I got to know that I was very active in the International Society for Stem Cell Research, and I was really active in the stem cell research and discovery biology. And I got to know a lot of people. And one of the professors I got to know is Professor Derek Vanderkooy from the University of Toronto, who identified and was able to isolate these so-called retinal stem cells that we are working with. And these retinal stem cells, they reside in the ciliary body in the front of the eye. Now, what is special about these retinal stem cells compared to other projects that we have? Because in other projects, the pool of stem and progenitor cells that we regulate, they have repair mechanisms that kick in upon injury. In the eye, this is not happening, right? That's one reason why we go blind if something goes wrong, because we don't have a repair mechanism in the eye. And that's why, because these retinal stem cells, they are quiescent. Once the embryonal development has been completed and the eye has been built from the front to the back in about 6 months, then the retinal stem cells, they go into a quiescent state, dormant state. And we know that because, you know, we looked at different organ donations also. So from a child to a like 90-year-old person, these retinal stem cells are totally conserved, right? They are exactly the same in numbers and in capacity to regenerate and differentiate. So we had, our hypothesis was that that's good, right? For our hypothesis. It's bad for our human body that it doesn't happen naturally. But for our approach, for our hypothesis, if we find a molecule that can activate these retinal stem cells, get them out of their quiescent dormant state, then basically these retinal stem cells, they know what to do and they know where to go, because they have the triggers from this injury, but they are somehow blocked. So we unlock these pathways with our small molecules to activate, meaning proliferate, these retinal stem cells, and they then differentiate through the neuronal retina. They migrate through the neuronal retina, differentiate into photoreceptors, and integrate into the retina and rebuild photoreceptors, both types, rods and cones. We have demonstrated all of this in vivo animal models.
This is brilliant stuff, and it's definitely unique and new to a lot of the listeners to hear about this. So, one question, as just intuitively understanding the embryonic, a little bit of understanding of the embryonic eye and where one might find a progenitor type cell. And we know with the corneal epithelium that is regenerative, and that's, we see that clinically every day. Would these then be equivalent ciliary epithelial type cells, or is that where they are, undifferentiated in the location of the ciliary epithelium?
It's really in the ciliary body where they are found, and only there they are found, and can be dissected from the eyes, from human eyes. We also did, that's the big advantage with the, if I may open a bracket of our approach, is that we can already work, you know, with human-derived multipotent cells, you know, to regenerate then the functional cells.
These can be recognized morphologically with, I don't know, electron microscopy or other devices. Very few people, I think, know about this, and I want to give you a chance to talk about your products that you're actually using to work with these cells. But how understood is this in the eye in general? Is this a totally new concept that this exists, or was this around for a while and was never really employed?
So Professor Derek Vanderkooy published about 10 to 15 years ago about that already. So I think it was never really exploited. And you know, it's like in science, in research, in all different kind of fields, there are different opinions about different things. I mean, everything in science is something that we imagine, and then we try to find proof that it actually works as we imagine it. And here I have to admit, there are different thoughts about these retinal stem cells and how they work. I can, but what I can tell you is what we have found and what they do, in our hands upon stimulation. Yeah.
Great. So I totally get that. And so let's talk about the stimulation. What are you specifically trying to do? What are the types of molecules you're using to stimulate or induce some kind of effect with these cells?
Okay, so that's a very good question because it comes into play about the real drug, the molecules, right? And basically the foundation of endogenous therapeutics. So what we did was basically we created a self-organizing map. And here you have to know that I co-founded the company of Professor Gisbert Schneider. He's a professor for AI and machine learning at the ETH in Zurich. And fun fact, and coming back to my previous professional career, I worked with Gisbert already when I was a chemist in the lab at Roche, and he was the head of chemoinformatics at Roche. So we worked already 20 years together. So it was nice to
Full
work with him
circle.
together. Yeah, full circle, exactly. And he helped me to categorize the molecules that, I was very active in the stem cell research field, and I saw all the publications, the posters, the presentations, the conferences, and I collected small molecules that were published on specific stem or progenitor pathways. And so based on this collection, we built a database, and then we applied machine learning algorithms to differentiate these molecules. And for these retinal stem cells, we focused on the neuroectoderm molecules in this pathway. And we designed according a small molecule library, very small actually, of just 500 molecules initially, that we screened on these retinal stem cells. So phenotypic screen to see which molecules could actually activate these retinal stem cells. That was the beginning. And then in vitro, we demonstrated that, well, indeed, upon activation, we can differentiate them in photoreceptors. And once we had this in vitro proof of concept, we went to in vivo and we showed the same, like the activation in mice of these retinal stem cells. And then we labeled these cells and we demonstrated, how they then migrate through the neuronal retina to the back of the eye, integrate into the retina and differentiate into photoreceptors, rods and cones. We have beautiful, beautiful histology pictures, cut through the eye, how you can see how compared with mice that were blinded before and treated with basic salt solution, placebo versus our drug, the retina was completely gone, and we were able to regenerate the outer nuclear layer massively, nearly back to normal. And also the rods and the cones regenerated, they already had kind of the retinal structure.
Wow, that is incredible. You could spend hours explaining to us how the science works. It's really incredible stuff. Let's move forward to hear a little bit from you about your clinical programs then. You have two posterior segment of the eye programs, AMD, which is preclinical, I believe, and RP, which is now early clinical testing. What can you tell us about those programs? Where are they? And maybe some of the business modeling you have for these programs.
I'm very happy to do that because these are recent data that just come out now. So I'm very eager to see, the data. As you say, it's still ongoing, the clinical trial. We have received IND for the RP program in February 22. We have started the clinical trial in July 22, and just 1 year later, we have dosed all patients with all doses. So we had 3x3 dose escalation cohort and then 5 patients in an expansion cohort. So 4 cohorts in total. Now, the dosing schedule, I think I need to explain a little bit. We have 4 IVT injections over 4 weeks, so once a week. This is what we have found in vivo preclinical study to work the best. You know, we did different frequencies, different doses, etc. So with that, we also went into the clinic. And firstly, these four injections, they, for all the patients, they went very well. So we have no inflammation. We have very, it's very clean. You know, we sailed through that. Our drug is very safe, which we are very happy about it. And we can continue on that. Secondly, on the concept. So we are not a gene therapy, right? So we do not correct the underlying genetic defect in RP. But we all know that we have more than 80 genes involved, right, in this. So with a single gene therapy, we don't get very far. You know, there, I know there are different gene therapies now in development that are also gene agnostics. Our approach is also very gene agnostic. It even goes beyond RP. It's actually applicable to any IRD where you have photoreceptor loss. Now, important about our concept is that once we have done this schedule of injection, as I said, in embryonal development, it takes about 6 months, right, from these retinal stem cells to the photoreceptors or completely die. So that's why also our readouts will go for 6 months at the moment, because we believe that's the time it takes for the full regeneration of these photoreceptors. We have seen that actually in vivo models. So even when our compound was not there anymore in the eye, our compound doesn't have a really long half-life. It's not there anymore, but we still see the improvement of the mice seeing better and the structural improvement. That's the hypothesis and the concept that we have demonstrated, because the biological mechanisms have kicked in, but take time.
Right. So that's presumably the multi-month or 6 month process you're mimicking in embryonic development, presumably. So you wouldn't need necessarily the drug to continue being present once you've started the process. It makes all the sense in the world.
Exactly.
Just for clarity, these are small molecules that you're using. And have they had previous clinical use, these molecules? You don't have to reveal anything that's confidential, but are they previous clinical use molecules, or are these novel molecules never used before?
Yeah, no, very good point. So firstly, it's not small molecules. It's just one single molecule.
Okay.
Right? So it's one single molecule. That's important. Then behind myself, you see the patents. So we have composition of matter patents for all of our compounds. So these are novel molecules that have never been in any other human trials, nor have they even been produced previously. Right. So it's really novel small molecules. And that's why the safety was so important for us. And we are very happy to have now the know-how that our drug is very safe to be applied. What I also would like to add is not only that it takes time for this process without our compound to be present, is also that once the new photoreceptors have been regenerated, they still carry the genetic defect. So at some point, they will also degenerate. But depending on the genetic background of the RP patient, this can take years. So our compound can be injected, and we will find that out in larger clinical studies that we will embark on very soon, between anything between once a year to maybe once every 5 years, you know.
Is so, it the so same something- molecule that would be used to induce this in the RP as it is in the AMD, or is this a different protocol?
Very good question. And because of our concept to be specific to the developmental pathways, it's a different molecule.
Yeah.
So it's two different molecules, and it's, again, it's two different novel molecules with each of them different composition of matter patterns. So they are really structurally different, yeah. And in the AMD, if I may expand, you know, what we do there is, you know, we intervene actually in this epithelial to mesenchymal transfer that is happening, you know, and where we attack this problem that after the age of 50, you know, RPE is not regenerated anymore, hence leading to age-related macular degeneration. And this is a project where we work with Professor Pete Coffey from the Moorfields Eye Hospital.
Sure.
And obviously he is or has been also transplanting RPE cells, our approach was very appealing to him, having done this D cell transplantation himself. And here I'm really very excited because so we will submit IND very, very soon, still this month. And so that will be our second program in the clinic in 7 years since inception of the company. And what we have demonstrated here in vivo model is that we have regenerated RP cells. So the RP cells are growing back. We use the sodium iodate rat model to deplete the RP layer, and it's really growing back. And not only that, we then looked at functional improvement, because that's the end game, right? I mean, each RP cell holds about 50 photoreceptors, if I'm not mistaken. So you're the better expert there.
But I think that you're probably more expert than me in this. I operate on them, but I can't see them individually.
yeah, true.
This is brilliant conceptualization. It's a really new paradigm, obviously, for stem cell clinical technology. And I'm sure this is the first time a lot of people are hearing about this and will now go read up and figure out what the heck is going on here. It's really amazing. I want to give you a chance before we run out of time on the business side for these programs. Where has a lot of the funding come from? Are you raising? Are these going to be separate business entities, the two different clinical programs, or are they all under the same financing roof, et cetera?
So at the moment, it's really everything under one roof. Endogena Therapeutics, it's under one company. We have received funding from two professional investors, two investment firms. And then we have received significant funding also from individuals, most of them affected by one of the disease or have somebody in the family. And we are extremely grateful for the support we have received, of course, from the investors, investment groups, but also from these private individuals, because it is very important for myself and my coworker, you know, to be in touch with these patients, and we have regular exchange also with patients, and that is of course a big motivation for us to drive this forward as fast and as we can.
That's great. Are you raising for the next round of clinical testing?
So absolutely. So as we have now completed the first clinical trial, the dosing, we are still on this, still waiting for the final readouts that should come out beginning of next year. But as I said, it's safe, and obviously we do it in patients. So we do see very encouraging signals also there. We are now planning and hence need financing for the next larger clinical trial. And we are raising this fund as we speak right now. Yeah.
This is great. Good luck. It's obviously some challenging times in fundraising that we both are facing in our various.
Sure.
But this is so imminently interesting from a scientific side and so imminently potentially powerful clinically that maybe you will not have too much trouble because of the despite the environment. This is so unique a paradigm. As a scientist, as a doctor, I'm very, you know, motivated by this project. It's incredible that you've come to this, and it sounds very promising. I'm sure the patients are very excited to be tested. I'm sure you'll have no problem enrolling clinical trials for this methodology. Intravitreal injections are a very minimal barrier to it. We employ tens of thousands of these injections. So this becomes, unlike some other stem cell programs, a very approachable treatment paradigm in the clinic for patients and doctors. That's very important because we have a system now of intravitreal injection. This would move easily into that. I'm glad you're able to do it through that common route. What's next then for Endogena? Will you be starting a GA trial or an AMD trial? When's the IND planned for that?
Yeah, exactly. So we will submit the IND still this month. Very excited about that. And we plan to start the first clinical trial in GA patients sometime next year, hopefully beginning of next year. Yeah. Yeah.
This is great. Thank you very much, Matthias. This has been incredibly educational for me and I'm sure for the listeners because this is a new concept. I appreciate your time in coming on. And before I say goodbye, I want to make sure to mention to the listeners not to forget in December 1st and 2nd in San Diego, our next OIS meeting. And we'd love to see you back on the podium to speak again on Endogena and an update in one of our upcoming meetings.
Thank you very much, Firoz. It was really a true pleasure always talking to you, and I enjoyed the discussion we just had. Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.